Clubhouse.
Welcome back to another Love It or Leave It with Pod Clubhouse. This is Paul, and I'm here with two co-hosts. I'm with Eric Grubbs, a freelance music writer.
Hello.
And I'm with Dee from the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Hello, everybody.
You might remember Dee from an earlier interview with a podcast where we discussed with him and his partner what makes their podcast tick. If you want to know, then go check that out. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Paramount Plus's recent production of a show called Cradle to Stage. Had either of you guys heard of the book that this is all based on?
Yes, I had. I haven't read it, but I had heard about it. It came out a few years ago. It was co-authored by Virginia Grohl, Dave's mother. Basically, it set the template for what the six-episode series is.
Do you know if it covers more than the six performers that they put in the show?
I believe it does.
So the premise is kind of framing up these famous performers in terms of their upbringing, interviewing mothers with their rocker children. Overall, what was your take on this show, Dee? Did you like what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, there's talk in a lot of successful people's lives about the fact that they kind of have a similar upbringing. And a lot of times that includes trouble with parents and specifically with the mom. But, you know, this was an entirely different story. This was nice to see these successful musicians who actually have a, you know, maybe it's not a perfect relationship with their mom, but something that is, you know, that they communicate and are obviously loving each other.
Did anything jump out at you, Eric, in terms of being surprising about any common themes in the various people that you saw?
That even though they interview six completely different artists with six completely different backgrounds, there's this common thread of like, if you want to do this, then okay. I might not totally see what you're going for, but if this is what you want to do, then you should go for it. I think that's a very healthy, grounded, realistic way of like encouraging kids, no matter if they want to be full-time musicians or painters or YouTubers, to be a little inside baseball here for your listeners. But Paul, you and I grew up in the same neighborhood, a suburb of Kingwood outside of Houston, is that I don't think there were many parents that were thinking this way, like any of the parents featured on the show.
In Kingwood? So,
and so it was just kind of fascinating to see, like, you know, these parents that were all like, yeah, if you want to do it, do it. And it goes back to something that actually, when I was living in Kingwood, something that I read in Michael Azarad's Come As You Are, The Story of Nirvana, is that when Dave Grohl is introduced, talks about how he dropped out of high school right not long before he was supposed to graduate, and that he, you know, quit and joined the rock band Scream. To see Michael Azarad, if memory serves me correctly, but it's like his parents were okay with it. And I thought, man, there's got to be a story there. And all these years later, here's the story.
That story gets expanded on a little more with every episode.
Yes.
Like every episode it tells several stories at once. It tells like the performer, and then it talks about their mom. But then another good portion of each episode continues us along Dave and his mom's journey to rock stardom.
Yeah.
The last time that I had watched music documentaries with any regularity was way back. And this might speak to you, Dee, in terms of Behind the Music.
I'm so thankful that that series is on YouTube, even if it is, you know, pirated probably by some YouTuber out there in, you know, Guatemala or something. It's really nice to be able to go back and look at those things from the late 90s and the early 2000s about the bands from the 80s.
And it seems like everybody has the exact same story. But it's like they just had this formula of telling a story arc, and you could tell when they were trying to pull out some kind of drama and it just wasn't there, like the Faith Hill behind the music, the Pat Benatar behind the music. Obviously, I spent a lot of time in my college years and post-college years watching behind the music over and over and over again, including bands that I didn't really care about, like Creed. But or even the Celine Dion one, where it's like there's no drama in that woman's life at that time, you know, and she just said, well, you know, there's some people that just don't like what I do, but I guess I'm doing something right. And I was like, wow, okay. But
yeah, you're a rebel.
You know what's funny is, like, this comes into my day job where it's like things that I randomly remember from behind the music episodes. I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, that guitar that Neil Sean played on. Oh my God, we have that guitar that he wrote Patiently with. So it's like behind the music does have value to it, but I understand the criticism of, like, you know, this was a really popular show that hasn't aged well.
I had to apologize to my waitress last night. She was back there. It was actually the bartender. She was singing along with Let's Hear It for the Boy. And I'm like, you know this song? Because she's young, you know. She's like, oh, yeah, it makes me think of Footloose. I was like, did you know that that album was the album that knocked Thriller out of the top spot? And I was like, I'm so sorry that I just 80s geeked out on you really hard right there. I apologize.
If you ever really want to bum somebody out, tell them the truth about Gary Glitter.
Oh, man.
Not a nice guy, that guy. I don't want to bring down the podcast.
Oh, but. Yeah. I mean, there's that cautionary tale of don't meet your heroes. I've been fortunate that with the few that I've met, they've always been really, really nice. But I have heard of people that's like, oh, I was the biggest fan of this person, and then I met him and he was a total jerk. And I was like, well, maybe you caught him in a bad moment, you know?
Right, right. Let's hope. Let's hope for that.
Yeah.
But comparing Behind the Music to this, this is more of a completely modern style of documentary kind of filmmaking.
Absolutely.
There is drama in these various stories that just comes from either, depends on the story. Sometimes it's the mother, sometimes it's the performer, you know, sometimes it's their relationship, but they don't need to drum it up and they don't need to kind of build it up for the commercial break or anything that you might have experienced with Behind the Music.
Next, drugs take over.
Right, exactly. It's 'cause in all these stories, or almost all these stories, that part's kind of assumed.
And later, the band gets back together.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Again, I watched a lot of episodes of Behind the Music, but yeah, I mean, it's like if you liked Sonic Highways as well as Sound City, chances are I think you'd dig this, because as far as like how the story's told, and it's like I know there's a segment of people that do not like Dave Grohl's earnestness. I'm all for it because like the things that he learned early on are still with him to this day.
Interesting guy in terms of his own take on music. There's so much I did not know about him, including that he did not actually own a drum set while he was learning to play, or that he doesn't know how to read or write music.
Right. I mean, let's go back into the Wayback Machine. When I was reading Come As You Are and how like he had a military marching drumsticks, you know, which Paul, you remember those very well, that they're much thicker than, say, you know, 3A or 5B or 2B. And so he would hit, you know, on basically on his bed with his pillow. I remember reading Come As You Are, and what was the most common trait of all the drummers other than Dale Crover that Kurt really liked about Dave Grohl's drumming? And it's because he hits so hard. And I played in a band that, Paul, I don't think you ever saw me play, but I was so terrified of getting thrown out of the band because the singer was such a big fan of Kurt Cobain that if I didn't hit hard, then I would have been thrown out of the band. But years later, I played in this backing band situation for this guy, and I was essentially thrown out of the band because I played too loud. But yeah, I mean, like, Dave Grohl definitely has these fascinating insights to his story about how his mom was so, you know, she was a full-time school teacher, and she would rent out a vinyl record player, and they'd bring it home and have music for Dave and his sister to listen to.
Yeah, I was just thinking, even though he can't read or write music, he talks about how one of those first albums that he got when she was doing that, that she let him go out and pick, had Frankenstein on it. And then he does the da 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 and his and just in that, you know, bad mic, just spur of the moment thing, you can tell this guy is fully he's immersed in music. Like his pitch was perfect, his timing was perfect, his drops were perfect. It was all just spot on, even though it was just this kind of, I'm just humming a tune of a song I loved when I was a kid.
That enthusiasm that he has, I've just always found that to be inspiring.
You talk about his earnestness, and it was involved creatively with the documentary style. Mm-hmm. I think that really comes across in what he got from the performers and their moms. Like in, just in the very first episode, you know, they interview the singer of Imagine Dragons and his mom separately and together, and they go through the house and they talk about that. I had no idea that guy was Mormon, or that now that I know that, and I listen to Imagine Dragons music, it's like, okay, this is a completely different message than I was getting before, but now I get it.
Yeah, and what's also great is, like, I'm not really familiar with Imagine Dragons. I'm not really familiar with Miranda Lambert or even Brandi Carlile. I know a lot about Tom Morello and Rage Against the Machine, as well as Geddy Lee and Rush. Kind of know a little bit about Pharrell Williams. But all these episodes, their stories were interesting enough that it's like I didn't have to know, like, well, what's the biggest Imagine Dragons song? Because they're telling the human story, that's what's way more interesting than, you know, deciding what, oh, let's do a retrospective on this one Imagine Dragons record, all this. It's like, that's way less interesting to me. It's just more about, like, you know, in the case of the first episode, it's like, how did this kid from a very large Mormon family end up being the kind of singer that he is and the kind of person that he is, whether he turned out good or turned out bad. I mean, it's like that's, or if he had a good relationship with his mother or not. And it's like, you just kind of see it unfold, and it's not formulaic, and it's a very kind of refreshing take on, you know, what you were saying earlier, Paul, about how it's a very modern take.
His journey was actually one of the, like you were saying with Dave, his mom just got it. You know, this kid is built for music, and if he doesn't make any music, he ain't making it anywhere else.
Right.
So, right. And there were a few other instances like that, like Pharrell, Brandi Carlile, but the Imagine Dragons guy, that was not as automatic for him and his family, if I recall.
Yeah, and also I thought, like, the way that he's, like, acting while he's being interviewed, I'm like, oh, something big, you know, dramatic's gonna happen, and it never happens, which... it's fine by me. you know, it's just, you know, finding out that one of his brothers is the manager of the Killers, or was the manager of the Killers.
Right.
And it's like, well, come on, give Imagine Dragons a shot. And
nope.
And well, but that was good because,
right.
Because, like, one of the most important things that people have to learn, whether you're a parent or not, is that you have to give people the breathing room to fail. Because, you know, we always hear the stories about people that are instantly amazing at something, and that's just what they're going to do for the rest of their lives. In the case of Dan Reynolds of Imagine Dragons, it's like he and that band really had to work at it, you know, play lots of shows to very little people, slowly build up the audience so they could kind of develop their own sound. Because same with, like, you know, this thought that, you know, if you're this genius musician, then boom, you have your sound, and it's right away. No, like, most bands start out terrible. Now, it's only when you look back and you think, oh man, our first few songs were absolutely terrible. But it's like, it's the path that starts to lead you down the road where you are. And if you're happy with where you are down the road, you know, that's good. And so I'm not really inclined to check out Imagine Dragons music, but I really liked the kind of story that was told. Coming from a big family, it's like, well, how do you stick out and kind of find your own path, especially when all the other siblings go on to have, like, quote unquote, legit jobs and, like, good paying legit jobs.
There are other shows out there right now that are a little bit like this. Have you seen on Netflix, either one of you, I think it's called Making the Song or
Song Explorer?
Is that it? Yes.
I think it's Song Explorer, where it's like they will focus on one song. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. And they talk to like REM about Losing My Religion is one.
Yep.
That gets down to that kind of granular level you were talking about a second ago in terms of like examining a song, what went into it. And that's all surprising stuff sometimes. Big songs are not always the the heart-wrenching, soul-pouring kind of experience that you might expect from an artist. It might just be like they just jotted it down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Song Exploder. Why do I keep calling it Song Explorer? But whatever. But yeah, it's like when have you seen the episode where they dissect Hurt by Nine Inch Nails?
Yes.
I mean, seeing Trent Reznor just be so forthright about everything, but how they like dissect like every little moment of that. That's cool. But at the same time, it's like when you tell this kind of like big human story, that translates more to whether or not you play music or not. At least to me.
Well, in the context of the show we're talking about, it's almost like Dave Grohl might have been, out of the rockers I know, the only guy to do this, in terms of the approachability, the forthrightness you were talking about, Eric, and maybe even just that connections. The dude seemed to have friends everywhere.
Yeah. Everything that I've heard about Dave is that he is a very personable guy. Now, when you say talk to people that, well, one of the people that no longer is a member of the Foo Fighters, he has some things to say about the Foo Fighters and how they're actually run. But for the most part, for, people that I've known that have interviewed him said, like, he showed up 3 hours late to the interview, but he was a fantastic interview, and it's just kind of like, all right, he's a very well-liked guy, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not trying to give too much credence to the trolls, but it's like, I understand that there are people that don't care for how like excited he gets and likes to ask lots of questions and that kind of stuff. But hey, as a Dave Grohl fan, this show is like perfect.
Yeah, he seems to me to be a guy who doesn't take himself too seriously, but also doesn't take life too seriously. Like he's going to go have fun doing the thing that he loves to do, but he's not going to pretend that he's something he's not either. He's fully, like you're talking about Sound City. He talks, he routinely is just like, I have no idea what this guy is talking about because I'm not smart enough to understand what he's saying right now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's talking to Robert Nev.
Yeah. The Nev console.
Those clips that they show of Dave when he was a teenager, my adult self looks at that and I'm like, I could never take this guy.
Yeah. I mean, like when he was playing with Mission Impossible and Dane Bramage, I mean, it's like maybe the closest thing I could have like related to that is like when Kingwood High School would have Battle of the Bands. Did you ever go to those, Paul?
Oh, yes. There was a lot of energy, a goofy energy.
I just remember seeing that band Discourse play. Yeah. Discourse, where Kevin Newsom was in the band, Ryan Carey was the guitar player. They play like really fast, and people would mosh, and like the vice principal had to tell the band to stop playing because y'all are getting too violent. And so seeing that stuff in the show just brings back good memories, but also understanding that Dave was kind of a one in a few thousand people that would go on to have a big career.
Do you suppose that the theme that a lot of these performers found, which would be kind of troubling for, like we were alluding to earlier, certain parents, in that at least half of these parents involved at a certain point in their children's development said, you know what, you be you. And even if you're not done with high school, just go do this.
Yeah. I cannot name really any parent from Kingwood that was that way. But I think parents had their reasons why, because I didn't realize this until years after I moved out of Kingwood. I grew up in an area where it's not necessarily common, where it's like growing up with, you know, kids of Continental airline pilots, people that work for gas companies, Enron employees. You know, it's like, I don't know of like really anybody that is of that background as an adult now at 42. So it's like there's kind of this special charm, and they do go into the backstory of the mothers about how that they've had unconventional upbringings, especially Tom Morello's mom.
My God, she's a remarkable woman.
Yeah.
There were some of these stories where they were kind of light on the mom. I don't mean to suggest that maybe that mom didn't have enough story, but when you get to Mary Morello, all of a sudden, even though Tom Morello is super accomplished, very well spoken, Harvard educated, which no one would guess if you were just like looking at like a lineup, you know, of rock guitarists, her story dominated the episode, and it was a pleasure to hear it. I mean, just when she describes the siring of Tom. And she says, I met his dad, and he was a pretty cool guy. And then I was carrying Tom.
Yeah.
And then but she's 95.
Yeah. And then so she shows up right before a Rage Against the Machine show in her very mom jeans and mom clothes. And she's just like, she's got this audience in her hand. And I thought, that's so cool. You know?
But, yeah. She's lobbying against censorship.
Yeah, which was great because, like, you know, at that time, there was all these concerns about what kind of impact lyrics, especially that heavy metal and hip hop lyrics, have on kids. But it's like, contrast that with Bev Lambert, who, you know, is very East Texas kind of woman, you know, but they're all like, well, we just always believed in Miranda and everything. But I love the part that they put in the part about how Miranda had a first attempt at recording. And, you know, they pulled all the extra money that they had and they recorded this CD. And Miranda's like, this isn't me. And I was like, that's the kind of stories that need to be told instead of just being all like, you know, I was just kind of kicking around for a few years. And then I found this guy who's now my manager. And next thing I know, I woke up and I had a platinum record. You know, I don't care for those stories. So, but I enjoyed, they showed the ups and downs of what Miranda Lambert went through and, you know, never talked about her first husband situation. But I think that's for another, I think that's for the Miranda Lambert story.
Yeah.
But as far as in the context of this show, it's just more like, you know, these parents were like very involved. And it's like, yeah, Miranda, you're going to make it. But it's like Miranda really had to find her own way despite that.
Did you notice that they didn't really mention much about their bands or collaborators?
That's true.
I think that especially with the format that these episodes have, that you kind of have to do that. Otherwise, you're going to go down a rabbit hole with everybody else that's involved. The thing that you're talking about, the thing that makes it so heartwarming is it's about the relationship. It's about those relationships that the artist and their mom had. And, you know, if you're going off into other collaborators, then you're kind of deviating from that central idea that makes the series so engaging. So, yeah, I noticed it, but I could understand it.
Yeah, you compare and contrast the Geddy Lee story that's told on from cradle to stage versus what was told in Rush Beyond the Lighted Stage, whereas like it just focused, you know, this show that we're talking about just focuses on, you know, Geddy and his mom. His mom didn't get rock and roll. Here's this Holocaust survivor, and she thought Perry Cuomo was an entertainer, you know. And so, but the thing is in the Rush documentary, you see footage of a teenage Alex Lifeson arguing with his family about how, like, you know what? I don't want to finish high school. I just want to go on tour with my little band. And how his parents were like, what? You are just so out of control. And in the case of Geddy Lee, telling his story a little bit more in depth here, his father died when Geddy was just before he was about to become a teenager. And there was kind of this angry, rebellious side that he was all like, no, I want to go out and do things with my life. And growing up with the horrors of the Holocaust, which are still in his mom's memory, and it's absolutely terrible. But at the same time, Getty had this kind of rebellious side of like, I want to have my own life instead of constantly be afraid.
That story stood out to me probably just generationally, even though Mary Morello was probably a similar age to Mary Weinrib. But their experiences were vastly different. And so they wound up with very different stories for the paths for their sons. Although it's not that Tom had a paved road to success and stardom either. But one definitely common thread with all of them was, like you mentioned, Eric, none of them, this was just like a hobby. All of them, they worked their asses off. Like, I don't have anybody in my life that's worked this hard for something. Yeah. Actually, seeing Pharrell, for instance, people seem to think that a guy that prolific, it just must occur to him to just make music. No, that guy works really, really hard and barely sleeps when he's working, you know. Mm-hmm. He also had a very lucky break in his teenage years, which I thought was kind of amusing, with the music producer moving in next door to his high school. That was kind of a cool break, but I think he would have made it regardless.
Yeah. I mean it's like, as I'm just thinking about this, Paul, do you remember a guy named Peter Best? No, not the original Beatles drummer, but Peter Best. Do you know what that guy's doing now?
No.
Well, he played drums and, you know, he went on, and he's now a world-renowned photographer of metal bands, and like specifically black metal bands. And so like the fact that someone like that, you know, has gone on to have kind of this like kind of crazy career from, of all places, Kingwood, you know, but I guess maybe that's part of that rare drive of people that you know.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know, the stories of the bands that we've done, there's always band members at the beginning that fell off. Like, you talk about the passion that these guys all have and the hard work that they all put in, and everyone that's like a member of a band, there's always that guy. It's Mark Stone for Van Halen, you know, it's just, there's always, yeah. What was Chad's last name that was with the drummer for Nirvana before Dave came along? Chad Channing. Like, it was, they either weren't measuring up to the band standard, or they decided, you know, this isn't really my thing. And I think that's a part of it. You've got to put in the hard work. You've got to be completely committed. And then, of course, you also sometimes have to have those lucky breaks, like a sound producer coming to your neighborhood.
Yeah, that helps. Definitely helps. Well, guys, I think we could probably keep talking about this for another hour, but I honestly think that we can render our verdicts now. Dee, would you recommend this to other viewers, or would you maybe qualify it for certain viewers?
I think if you're interested in the music industry at all, it's definitely worth the watch. I think that the key is that you get the human side of a story that we don't really get as often. And so if you'd like to see the human touch that's involved with all of these incredible megastars, then yeah, absolutely. This is totally worth the watch. I loved it. This is right up my alley.
What about you, Eric? Did you enjoy this?
I enjoyed it immensely. I watched most of it in just a few nights. I'd be happy to revisit the entire series again. It's definitely like, if you enjoyed Sonic Highways, if you enjoyed Sound City, you know that style. And also, if you're a fan of Dave Grohl, I'll just say this without spoiling anything, but basically, like, the first couple of episodes, if you know much about Dave's story, you've heard a lot of this, until the final episode where you start to see the full circle thing about Dave, his mother, and his eldest teenage daughter, and how she's turned out. Because he's talked about his kids on late night talk shows before, but now you're seeing especially his eldest, they're collaborating on music, and they recently put out like a 7-inch of them covering an X song where, you know, she's singing the straight up Exene Cervenka parts. And it's a song called Nausea. I believe that's from Los Angeles. And so it's just like, if you're into this, keep in mind, there's that other Dave Grohl documentary on the Coda Collection, What Drives Us, which is all about getting in a van and going out and touring. But as far as from cradle to stage, this is very well worth your time. And each episode is a manageable like 42, 45 minutes. You can hop around, but it's like if you see it all from front to back, then you see this great little story arc that happens with Dave Grohl's beginnings all the way to where he is now.
And even if you don't, and even say, you know, you're a person who's intensely interested in Miranda Lambert, but can't bring yourself to consider the hip hop star or the, you know, rock star or whatever. You just want to know about Miranda and her PI parents.
Yeah.
Then you would get a whole story by watching just that episode. And you'd get a little bit of Dave. Yeah, sure. I think you'd come out with a satisfying amount of Miranda also, for any of them, actually. And I think that's what makes this a very good series to recommend, even if you're not so intense on needing to know about the music industry. But say you just like these musical performers and you're interested in knowing a little bit more, you could drop in and just know more. I mean, I'd recommend the Tom Morello one to anybody, just based on his mom.
Seeing Tom Morello play at a Renaissance festival.
Yeah, anywhere where there's injustice, he'll be there with his guitar. So anyway, that sounds like three Lovitz, if maybe a little qualified towards people that are more interested in music than the general audience might be. But this is a well-made series, and if they came out with a season two and they covered more, I think I'd probably watch more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is rather short and sweet because I think we got right to the meat of it right away, because what we had here was special and good and focused. So it's been a real pleasure chatting with you guys this evening.
Yeah,
it's been a great time as usual, man. It was good to be back in.
Well, we'll have to team up again.
Yeah, be happy to talk to you guys. Always a pleasure. And, you know, it's been good to keep up with you and Caroline all over these years.
If people want to find you and your podcast, D, where would they look?
We are the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, which you can find on just about any podcatcher that's out there. But we've got a family of about 26,000 followers on Facebook. So go check out our Facebook page and like us and follow us. We love to be goofy on there, just like we are on the podcast.
And Eric, if people wanted to find you or your writings, where would they look?
I would suggest check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/Eric_GRUBBS. That's where I link all the freelance articles that I do. Mainly these days, I'm freelancing for a Dallas-based alt weekly, I guess you could call, or a publication called Central Track. I wrote for 10 years for the Dallas Observer, and before that, I wrote for Punk Planet. And occasionally, from time to time, I will plug stuff that I do for my main full-time gig, which is at an auction house here based in Dallas. So, yeah, check me out on Twitter. Follow me on Instagram, Eric J. Grubbs. And I still have this old blog called themeparkexperience.com, and it's a line from the movie Swingers.
Well, all right.
Yeah, you didn't get the job as Goofy? Yeah, they went with somebody who had more theme park experience. And I thought, man, that's a great line. Yeah, no bands I was in were all like, yeah, Eric, let's call ourselves Theme Park Experience. So I just ended up calling my blog Theme Park Experience.
All right, well, this has been Paul with Pod Clubhouse, and we will catch you again next time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.